Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here with a little reminder, a little tip. Brown. You know what? Brown's a color, too. And according to our guest, the shades of brown in a winter garden need a little bit of appreciation from you and from me. Larry Mueller here again with our guest, director of the Allen Centennial Garden, Ben Fuda. Great to have him back. He has some suggestions and some ideas for making your garden visually interesting in the cold months ahead. And tell you what, we'll be answering your questions too as we move along. So what are your favorite winter interest plants? What questions do you have about maybe not cleaning up the garden in the fall? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Ben Fuda, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thanks. Great to be here.
You know what I'm going to be doing this weekend? My daughter Emily is going to be carving pumpkins with her cross-country friends. But I will be in the back lawn in the vegetable garden area, and I will be pulling out the tomato plants and getting the straw bale stuff taken care of.
It is time, yes.
But I'm leaving the front. I have no lawn on the front because it's all flowers and so forth. So I leave that alone.
Perfect. So
I never touch it.
Yeah. And so you mentioned in the intro that, you know, something that I'm fond of saying is brown is a color too. And I think the first thing you notice when you really start to look at sort of our landscapes for November and beyond is that brown is much too ambiguous a term for us to use. It's sort of like if you talk to fashion designers or interior designers and they say, no, it's not purple. It's, you know, mauve or puce or so there's a greater specificity that emerges. But it's the same when we think about this generic idea of brown. So we have silver and gray and taupe and sepia and terracotta and silvers and blacks. And suddenly there's this huge palette that opens up to us for this time of year that, again, most of us are focusing on, you know, when do these flowers and plants bloom and how do they look when they're blooming? But, you know, we have, especially here in Wisconsin, we have many more months to look at things. And I don't like to just look at a flat garden. I like to see something there.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And you know why? I thought about this as I looked at my own flowers the last couple of days, thinking about your trip over here. They don't look as nice right now. And I think that there's, you know, people look at those and they say, you know what, this doesn't look so good. I'm just going to clean this up. And if you just wait a little bit longer, they're going to look pretty good.
Yes. And I will say there are probably some plants that do the job better than others, sure. But anything with strong seed heads are typically things we'll look out for in terms of structure and texture, especially. So any of the coneflowers, the echinaceas work really, really well. A lot of our native plants as well typically have some really good four-season structure and interest. But things, you know, as much as I love them in the garden border, daylilies, they sort of melt. If you're looking for winter interest, that's one that you might have in your summer borders, but don't plan on it for November through March.
Yeah, for sure. Well, what about plants that are diseased, though? Should be getting rid of them.
Yes. So this is sort of the one exception to the rule. Generally speaking, from an ecological standpoint, leaving this brown material up is great for overwintering pollinators, habitat for birds looking to build nests before winter. All kinds of benefits come of this. But the other piece of it is if you do have disease problems or pests in your garden, but those I would say take a little bit of specific targeting from the point of the gardener. So if you've identified that you have a pest or disease, you mentioned your tomatoes, and tomatoes are sort of falling outside the realm of what we're really, we're really thinking of flowering herbaceous perennials, but,
sure.
We want to remove that, especially if they have things like blight or, apple scab from apple trees or something like that.
Yeah.
Those we want to remove and get out of the way. But generally with most perennials are pretty hardy and diseases typically aren't a huge issue for overwintering.
I have a squirrel that goes over a couple of neighbors over and gets some black walnuts and brings them over and then eats them right in my flower beds and on the driveway as well. But most of those flowers are not susceptible to the jug lawn, I don't think anyway. I have not seen any reaction because they leave the husks right where they... chewed away.
Yeah, and it may be just an issue of the concentration may not be high enough to cause much issue.
Yeah. Ben Fuda, our guest today, as we talk with him about appreciating brown in the garden. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments or experiences to share. So give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And if you've got some photos, maybe you've got some terrible photos of some plants you don't like. Maybe you've got a great summer or fall photo of your garden. We love to see those as well. Put those in an email and send them to ideas@wpr.org, and we'll talk about them a little bit. So I hope you do that. Do that right now, as a matter of fact. So do you clean up in spring?
Yes. So we typically will leave a lot of our material intact, both in my personal garden and in the Allen Centennial Garden. We will leave things standing over winter. And so a lot of our gardens have been designed so that in probably late February, early March, when the initial spring thaw is over, but the ground has, it's no longer muddy. It's firmed up a little. We'll take our push mower, set it on its highest setting, and we'll just buzz everything and leave it in place. And so, we're finding that we're not bringing in as much, bark mulch or anything like that, which really is not something that a lot of plants are familiar with, from an ecological perspective, but they are familiar with last season's debris and sort of composting things in place.
I've heard some people say, well, I hate leaving the foliage around because it just encourages bad insects and maybe disease for next year.
Mm-hmm. I think the benefits certainly outweigh the negatives for the most part. The breadth and depth of wildlife that can overwinter in debris and in plant material, I think is much greater than any of the sort of potential negatives that may come with that. Now, again, the exception being if you noticed a specific pest or something, if there's wood chips next to your house and you're noticing termites or something, that's a cause for intervention. That's not a just leave it and wait. But for the most part, again, a lot of our beneficial insects and pollinators, sort of that's where they go in winter.
Ben Fuda, our guest, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Getting some callers online, but there's still a line open for you. When you think about, let me ask you first about Allen Centennial Garden, because I should have done that early on here. The garden, you had a great summer. I mean, the garden looked wonderful
Thank
all
you,
summer.
Yes. We haven't had a shortage of rain. That's helped.
Yeah, no shortage of rain for sure. Anything still going on at the garden?
Actually, botanically speaking, yes. So we haven't had a freeze yet. Everything is still in and looking great. The tropicals, all of our tender plants are still really at their crescendo. The moment it frosts, obviously that'll be over. But for now, everything's still looking really well. But in the next couple of weeks, our bulbs will be showing up. And so even if it doesn't freeze, we'll be needing to switch things out. But right now, it's a really perfect time to visit.
Good time to do it. And maybe this weekend, I tell you what, I'm lucky because one of my offices is located almost right next to the Allen Garden. So I walk by it every single day and get a chance to sneak in and take a look. And it's always a day brightener for me. I had some friends visit the program here, and they had never been to the garden.
Oh, nice.
And I suggested they go, and they were enthralled with it. So
love to hear it.
Jim in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Yes, I wanted to mention to our listeners that the hydrangea that we have in our gardens winter over just beautifully, and they are so much fun to look at throughout the winter. We even bring some of the dried hydrangea heads into the house, so it's quite an interesting plant. The question I have has to do with grass. I've got some crabgrass that has died out in the lawn area. What do I do to alleviate that problem? I'd like to scrape it out and throw in some a little bit of soil and reseed, but what's the best way to do that, or what's the best time to do it, I guess?
So you're on the right track, sort of getting the crabgrass cleared out. This time of year, you could seed this fall. If we have a gentle fall, things may get seeded in and begin establishment. I would say do that very soon, in the next week, if not sooner. I wouldn't wait too much longer. But if you run out of time this fall, definitely next spring. Again, as you're noticing the rest of your lawn sort of coming out of dormancy, is a decent time to sort of go out, do a thorough raking, find any of those bald spots, and then do an overseed to sort of plug any gaps.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Jim. And what about Jim's comment relating to hydrangeas?
Yes, these they don't fall in the herbaceous perennial category, but they definitely fall in the exceptional winter interest category.
Yeah,
they age beautifully from white to sort of blushes of pink and burgundy, and then, of course, the beautiful browns later on.
Yeah, they're really fun to have in your lawn area through the year. Thanks, Jim. Sally in Madison will take a call from you. Hi, Sally.
Hi. One of my best and favorite things I've learned to do is hold up plants that start falling when we get to fall. So I take either the tomato wire cage rings and cut them apart, or the bigger ones that are out there in the garden centers. And then in the very, very beginning of the spring, I have a ring around the plant when it's just coming up, and I let it sit there till about now. When they're all starting to fall down, all the sedums that would look lovely if they were standing up are now getting waterlogged. Then I pull the ring up just enough to put it back into a group plant. It stays that way all through the winter. So my autumn joy plants, which I have around, are right now bright red. Pretty soon they'll be a little bit darker, but I won't cut them down until next spring.
Wow. Well, that sounds good to me. What about you, Ben?
That sounds like a great way to do it, especially because, you know, while the plants are still a little supple now, they haven't fully gone dormant for the year. It is easy to sort of, you know, like she said, just sort of nudge them in the right direction a little bit. So that's a great idea.
Yes. Yeah.
And this year we needed it even earlier because of all the heavy rain.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah. Thank you, Sally. Appreciate the call. Ben Fuda, our guest today. Ben is executive director of the Allen Centennial Garden, directs the operations of the garden and its programs, and his background, landscape architecture and sustainability. So it's great to have him with us. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us your photos and or your questions at ideas@wpr.org. Kate Archer Kent, our engineer today. Brianne Schesso, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network. Ben Fuda, our guest today from the Allen Centennial Gardens, as we talk with him about getting the garden ready for winter and appreciating the color brown over the winter as you take a look out the window and look through the snow and see those plants out there that died a long time ago but still providing a whole lot of interest. Join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe experiences. We've had some great experiences so far from listeners. What about you? Question? Give a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Ben, you're a landscape architect by training and a designer.
Well, I should say I started in landscape architecture.
Right,
and then,
started.
And then, and I did 3 semesters in undergrad and then realized it didn't have quite as much to do with plants as I wanted. And so I then found my way to public gardens.
But you did get into design.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, you did get into design. And I just wonder, do you... when you're designing, and thinking about the plants that go in, do you give consideration to the winter as well as what those plants are going to look like in the summer?
Most definitely. And so there's a famous plantsman out there, Pete Udolph, who's noted for saying a plant should look good when it's dead. And again, when we're thinking of perennials specifically, our period of bloom interest is really so short compared to the whole life cycle of the plant. So I'm thinking about, you know, the emerging foliage in spring, its fall color now, how well do the seed heads hold up? Does it need staking or can it stand up to the elements on its own? It's sort of a really exciting project for us. We just renovated our new American garden in the Allen Centennial Garden this season. So about 1,300 new perennial plants,
yeah,
all with this
great
idea of this four-season interest. It's looking fabulous right now. It's another great time to visit.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, we have some more callers, so let's take another call again. I think there's one more open line at 800-642-1234. Scott in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, or good afternoon. No, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about getting rid of Creeping Charlie and when the best time to do it would be.
I would probably say spring, only because being a perennial weed, it is starting to go dormant with other plants right about now. Any type of treatment likely is not going to be as effective now as it would be in spring when things are in a really active state of growth.
So wait until spring, until probably flowering or a little after flowering?
Yeah, just about when you see the flowers start to emerge, that should be probably the optimal time.
Yeah, and remember...
So is there a chemical available for getting rid of Creeping Charlie? It's been difficult to get rid of.
Yes, there are... In this case, chemicals probably are the best way. Hand pulling it, you'll hate yourself for it. So there are broadleaf herbicides out there that won't kill the grass, but will kill any of those broadleafed weeds. My recommendation, though, would be don't just coat the lawn. Do it yourself or hire a skilled horticulturist, because we really like to try and work around things like beneficial perennials like white clovers and other things that really encourage a healthy grass ecosystem. But you know, we don't want to nuke everything if we can help it. Be really specific and targeted.
And also remember that they're Creeping Charlie's one of the first things that blooms in the spring. And so the flowers are out there for the beneficial insects. And they don't have a whole lot else to go on.
And truthfully, you know, I mean, Creeping Charlie isn't necessarily harmful. And to that point, you know, we in the Allen Centennial Garden as well, we leave dandelions because they are some of the first food for pollinators. And so we don't spray, we don't kill anything. We embrace that they're a part of our sort of lawn ecosystems.
And Scott, if you had any children, I have gone out with my daughter. I've said this a couple times on the show, but I go out on the lawn even with my daughter, and we pull Creeping Charlie. You'd be amazed at how much Creeping Charlie you can pull in 15 minutes to a half hour, and it sort of sets it back, and it gives your lawn, your grasses, a chance to join in. I can get some pretty good piles in 15 minutes. So anyway, worth it. Thanks,
well,
Scott.
This is for my mother's lawn. She does not want Creeping Charlie.
Oh, gotcha.
On it. So.
Gotcha. Understood. Well, get over to mom's lawn and do a little pulling. There you go.
Okay.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Roy in Whitewater. Roy, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Hi, Roy. Thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
I just heard comments from a fellow who wants to get rid of crabgrass.
Yep.
My assumption from hearing him is that it's identifiable now. I'm looking out at my front lawn in the country, and I have had a real infestation of crabgrass this year, possibly due to the wet weather. I'm not sure. I've always been told that to prevent crabgrass, you need a pre-emergent. It would be spread early spring. And I'm calling to see if, now that I can clearly identify these areas where the crabgrass has apparently died and turned kind of a brownish-red color, could I apply that herbicide, pre-emergent now, and use it selectively rather than broadcast it over the entire lawn?
I would agree with using it selectively, just to minimize the impact of the chemicals. But I think waiting till spring would be your because they won't be doing any germinating yet this fall. They're going to wait until spring. So definitely
could mark those areas.
Yeah, and either put some marking flags out there or something to sort of remind yourself where those spots are, and that may be helpful.
Yeah, that should work, Roy. Thank you so much for calling. Pete in Reedsburg emailed and he says, "I have a fire and ice hydrangea that's been in place 3 years, doing very well. It's now about 5 feet high, 4 to 5 feet wide, so it is doing well. He wants to move it now, though. Should he do it this fall or wait until spring?"
So I would say actually fall is not a bad time to be moving things. Again, the plants are going dormant. They're not in active states of growth. So the shock that you'll, anytime we move a plant, there's some shock value going on. But doing it in fall minimizes that a little bit. But I would still say if things keep up, you shouldn't have to water it any additionally. But if things ever do dry out after you move it, definitely make sure you're giving it some good water. I also would prune the prune it back fairly significantly just to reduce stress next spring, so the plant isn't trying to leaf out a full-sized plant on a reduced root system. But after a year or so, it should push through and recover just fine.
Sounds good to me. Thanks for that email, Pete. Appreciate it. You can email, too, at ideas@wpr.org. Post an email and a photo, too, if you want. Kevin in Madison, it's your turn.
Good morning. I enjoy the show. I had a question about buckthorn. I've got a lot of saplings in this couple acres that I brought here in town, and I'm wondering, is it effective to treat them with a stump-killing product in the winter months?
It should be. I don't have a lot of personal experience with buckthorn, but for what I know of other sort of invasive treatments, I think it would be okay. I would probably do it more in the fall than deep winter. When the plant is fully dormant and not actively growing, it may not absorb the herbicide quite as well. So if you do it maybe in October, November, that probably is going to be a better bet than January or February.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that. And usually on the labels, you're going to get that information or suggestions mm-hmm. as to when to make those applications. So take a look at the label for whatever
for sure.
it is you buy, and then as you do that, you make those cuts. And I know for sure when you do make a cut, you should be applying that product pretty
right,
much right away.
Yes.
Right away.
Yes, you don't want to wait.
Not waiting around, because otherwise it's certainly then not as effective. Join in at 800-642-1234. Before I go back to the phones, what are some of your favorite winter interest plants?
One in particular for right now, Amsonias, are just an amazing plant, especially the Amsonia hubertii, which is one of our native Amsonias. They are just about to go a really strong golden lemon yellow color. They're just really spectacular this time of year. They also, in spring, have these big clusters of beautiful blue star-shaped flowers and are, again, fairly disease-resistant. They sort of, once they're in, they're in. I'd almost treat them like a shrub in the sense that they don't like to move, and they will just sort of stay put.
And, you know, this is the time of the year when it's awfully tempting. You know, the garden centers are all offering...
It's sale season, yes.
Yeah, it's sale season, so... Should we be taking advantage of that?
Yes, absolutely. The fall is a tremendous time to be doing planting. Again, typically the stress is on the plant as it's getting established or less. We're not going through, you know, 90-degree days and drought. They can, you know, get their roots initially established. But again, if you're going to be doing fall planting, I'd be doing it in the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't wait much longer, only because if they don't get at least a little bit of an anchor, they could frost heave over winter, and that's... It may not kill them, but it won't be great.
Yeah, there we go. Shirley in Marengo, let's go to you next. Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. We had a predicament that I had to cut down a lot of my perennials already. We had a new roof put on about 4 weeks ago, and then we had all that nice warm weather and then rain, and now they all are about 4 inches high, lilies and phlox and heliopsis. And is that going to hamper them for spring growth when they've sprouted already, like a second growth?
You might see some decline in blooms next year. I doubt it will kill them. I mean, they're pretty hardy beings. But because they've put a little bit of potentially stored root energy into growth this fall, like I said, you might see a little decline next spring. But is one way to sort of maybe help them through that the next year, just doing a really light top dressing of an organic compost or something like that, just to give them a little sort of nudge along, might be really helpful next spring.
We do, we have a lot of maple trees, so this fall, after the leaves have fallen, I mulch them up real fine, and then I'll cover all the beds with like 3-4 inches of compost mulch like that. Will that be sufficient enough for that, or?
That's definitely good. It may be helpful again in the spring just to add a little bit more, like a decomposed cow or horse manure or something with just a little more oomph. And the leaves are great for weed suppression, but thinking something with just a little bit more nutrient content to it, again, just to help sort of boost them along a little bit. But I doubt any of them will die.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, okay. Shirley, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. And when you do, our on-air producer, Breanne Schossel, will take your call in her lovely voice and help you out and get you on the air. So give a call now, 800-642-1234. Mary in Beloit, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I have two questions now. I started with just one. My daughter just bought me some beautiful, beautiful mums that she got from Deli's in Madison. And I know that mums can sometimes be fussy about wintering over. So first question is, what is the best way for me to get those planted so that they come back next year? Second is, normally I leave my garden for the winter so that birds have seeds and things like that. And I have some perennials, namely specifically bee balm. And I took those out this year because we're getting new windows in. I know they're going to get crushed. So I just took them out and I kind of broke up the heads with the hope that they would dry, although I don't know that they will this year, but would then come back again next year. Is there anything else I should do with those to help them along for next year?
So I will take the bee balm question first. So just to clarify, did you dig the plants out or just sort of cut them back?
As far as the bee balm, I cut them back.
Okay, if you just cut them back, they should be fine. They should come back next year without missing a beat. They should be fine. For the mums, I would say if you have them in containers or anything like that, I would put them in an actual garden bed. They'll be more likely to come back if they're actually in the ground. Containers have a tendency to freeze or just get colder, and they probably won't come back if they're in the containers. The other thing you can do to really hedge your bets would be, get a bale of straw or, again, some fall leaves and just maybe put a couple of inches of extra mulch on the tops of those plants after, probably in late November. And that may just provide a little bit of extra insulation that you'll then want to sort of rake back away come spring again, just to make sure they have room to breathe and come back.
There you go. Thank you.
One other quick question. Is it good to put like a slow-release fertilizer on the beds just to give them something over winter, a little extra now, or is that something better in the spring?
That's a better spring application.
Yeah. You don't want to encourage growth right now, and that's what would happen. So thanks, Mary. Appreciate the call. John in Wisconsin Rapids, your turn.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I got a question about lilacs. I heard it's better to trim them in the fall, and then somebody else told me, well, trim them right after it flowers. I was wondering what's the best time to trim them, and is there any fertilizer or anything I should be putting on them to make them flower better?
So for lilacs, in terms of timing, these are shrubs that will bloom on second-year wood. So they've already, at this point in the year, they've already set their buds for next year's flowering. However, the other side of that is it's much easier to see the branch structure when all the leaves fall off. So you can actually really see what you're working on, in the next month or two. The sort of rule of thumb with lilacs is to keep them vigorous and really doing well. Removing probably the oldest 20 to 30% of the canes every couple of years is the best way to do it. So you're never cutting everything down at one point. You're never totally taking everything down. So even if you do prune this time of year, yes, you are losing a few flower buds, but there should still be the bulk of your plant, about 70 to 80% of it there, that will be blooming. And so that's probably your optimum way to do it. To really take full advantage of those buds, if you really don't want to lose them, do the pruning in late winter, probably February, early March, and stick those little branches in a vase and maybe force those flowers to bloom for you a bit earlier.
I always thought that, the biggest limbs are the ones you're cutting. You're taking out the largest ones, and they're the ones that don't flower as well as the smaller ones anyway. So why not just go ahead and do it?
Yep, sometimes you just got to dive in.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the call. And Angela in Birchwood, we'll go to you now. Thanks for calling. Angela?
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
My question is about a plum tree that we had last winter that has had spotty foliage this summer, and I'm trying to decide if I should cut off all of the gnawed-on branches, if that would be better for the tree going into winter and next spring, or if this is not the time to do that and I should leave it be.
I would probably leave it be for right now.
And why?
Okay. Leaving it be only because the tree probably isn't going to have time at this point in the year to form calluses on those cut points and really heal over. And so, you know, chances are, you know, we like to try and do these things when, again, pests and bugs and diseases can't take advantage of the pruning. And so it may not look great, but you're probably going to be in a better shape if you do it probably, again, late winter.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dick in Black River Falls wants to know about planting grass seed. Should he plant it now so it germinates in the spring?
If you do plant it now, again, I do it probably in the next, very soon, in the next week. It typically, the seed won't overwinter, or if it does, it'll be really, really, the seed itself, it'll want to germinate now. If you can get it to germinate and sort of harden off a little bit in the next month or so, again, it'll be spindly right now, but next spring, it'll sort of be off to a start. But of course, the other alternative is to do the seeding early next spring when things start to warm up again, and that works just as well.
Yeah, it sure does. Thanks very much for that question. Appreciate your call. Join in, 800-642-1234. Chris in Rice Lake, your turn now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Larry. Great show.
Thank you.
I got a very nice red maple in between my house and the barn, and I want to turn that area into a flagstone patio. And you know, the tree is 40, 50 feet tall and has great fall color. And I'm just wondering, will it hurt the tree to, you know, truck in the sand and gravel base to level the area and then the flagstone to, you know, around it?
How close are you going to be wanting to put that flagstone in? How close to the tree, I'm sorry?
Well, the tree does have kind of a root crown of dirt around it that I've got, that daylilies grow in right now. I was going to kind of stop at the base of that root, that mound, which is about 2-3 feet away from the trunk.
Ooh.
Yeah, Larry and I are kind of giving each other looks. I would stay, a decent rule of thumb, and this isn't foolproof, but we look for what's called the drip line. So basically where the tree, the very finest points of the tips of the outer growing branches, sort of if you imagine a drip of water coming straight down from there, that's sort of what we call the really critical root zone. And so we try and avoid disturbance like compaction or, you know, digging things up too heavily in those areas. Certainly the roots do extend beyond that point, and it's not ideal to disturb that area, but anything under that root zone is the most precious. And if you're really looking to preserve that tree, I would consider relocating the patio someplace else.
Yeah, or...
I was not looking at digging up to put the gravel. I was going to add the sand and gravel on top of the current...
Yeah, it's still sort of the same condition. So any compaction, because the roots are actually breathing also at the same time, they've sort of found where they like to be relative to the soil surface, and any compaction with equipment or sand or gravel or adding height can do, you may not see the damage in the first year, but in 3 to 5 years, if you went through with this, the tree would likely suffer and decline.
Yeah, it's too bad. Those, you know, maple roots are really shallow.
And maple roots are also very shallow.
So they're even more susceptible than perhaps some other trees. Although many, many tree species are pretty shallow rooted when you get right down to it. So there you go, Chris. I don't know what else we
Sorry to be the bearer of bad news.
We can tell you on that, but I'd look for 3 to 5 years from now having some problems with your tree if you go ahead with it. So something to think about. Up to you to decide what you want to do. Let's go to Mary in Waukesha next. Hi, Mary.
Hi. We've got daylilies that were planted probably 13, 14 years ago, and this year they hardly bloomed at all, and they've got these seed pods on them. Do I need to dig them up, throw them out, or...
You said daylilies, right?
Daylilies, yes.
Yeah. Well, have you ever divided them?
No.
I would say it's, and you said you've had them for over 10 years in that spot?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And we've never divided them.
I would say it's time. So I wouldn't, you could do it this fall yet. Again, if you do lift and divide them, I do it in the next week or so. I wouldn't wait too much longer. But you could also do them in next spring just as easily. But dividing them will really rejuvenate the plants, should help with flowering. The seed pods, it's hard for me to know without seeing what, if it's an actual seed pod or if it may be something else. But in terms of encouraging more blooms, definitely sort of lifting and rejuvenating the plants should help tremendously.
Okay, if we divided them in the next, how do we store them for the winter?
I would plant them right back in the ground. So dig them up, divide them, and put them right back in. They shouldn't, they won't like being stored over winter, so they are very hardy. They can go back outside.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Lynn in Waukesha, it's your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Good morning. How are you?
Great, appreciate your call.
Well, I am calling about a trumpet vine that I planted earlier in the spring. It took off. It had some blooms. It was green. It was growing great on the south side of the house. Later in the season, about a month and a half ago during August, it started to turn yellow and looked like it was dying. Now, this is my first go-round with it, so I don't know, is there something I should or shouldn't do in the fall to hope it comes back in the spring?
Most of my experience with trumpet vine is it takes a lot to kill them. So my guess is this may be sort of just first year troubles. Also, it could be related to all the water we've had in some fashion. But I wouldn't stress out too much. I'd wait until spring and see how it does. But my gut is telling me you'll be okay.
Yeah. And it could be, yeah, hopefully next year you're going to have a great trumpet vine. I tried for 4 years to get a trumpet vine to go in a particular spot, and then I finally realized that trumpet vine does not, those trumpet vines I tried to plant did not like that spot, so I just gave up on it. Unfortunately, I had to.
Yep. Sometimes just
the location. Sometimes.
For sure. Yeah. But if this was its first year, I'd give it till next spring,
sure,
and see how it does.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Especially if it did gangbusters this year, I'd say you're on a good track.
Good luck,
all
Lynn.
Right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Joanne in Washington Island. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two quick questions. I have wonderful geraniums in planters outside, and I'd like to overwinter them. Can I move them inside? Do I need to water them? Will they survive?
You can move them indoors. They will still, so these are actually plants, if I'm thinking correctly of what you have, these are native to South Africa, and so they actually are like it a little hot and dry, and so they're not, I would say in terms of watering, let them get just a bit dry. You don't want them bone dry, but they don't need to be sopping wet all the time. But definitely in a place with high light, high heat, they will enjoy a bit. The downside is that they can get a bit leggy over the course of the winter. So by the time you're getting to March and April, they may just kind of look like little wiry trees. You can sort of nip those growing tips off, and it will encourage dormant buds to leaf out, and it'll get bushy and look really good again for the next growing season.
There you
great.
Go.
Great.
All right. Thanks.
Secondly,
for...
real quick, can I move my peony bushes at this time of year?
Yes, this is the time to do peonies. Yes.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Joanne, for calling. Appreciate it. Talking today with Ben Fuda, director of the Allen Centennial Garden. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at the fall and winter seasons in the garden and answering all kinds of questions with our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller, Ben Fuda of the Allen Centennial Garden, located on the UW-Madison campus. Our guest, once again, great to have him back, and thank you for listening in. We'll go back to the phones. The number is 800-642-1234, and the next caller is Arnie from Plainfield. Hi, Arnie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question on, I had started some sour cherries, probably more in season, from last year's seeds over the winter. They came up this spring and are doing really well, 3 to 4 feet, most of those. Is it a good time to move them better in the fall to the orchard or wait till spring?
I would probably move them on now, only because, again, they're going dormant. The disruption shouldn't be as great. Again, just keep an eye on things. If we do have a freak drought or things get warm again in the next month or so, just make sure to keep them all watered. But it should be okay to do it now.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think we'll get a freak drought.
I doubt that, too.
Thanks, Arnie, for calling. Appreciate it. Gigi in Janesville, your turn.
I heard a comment about seeding right now, grass seeding, and I'm curious, is it too late to thatch and overseed, or should I just thatch and then seed in the spring?
Larry, what do you
think? Do you really need to thatch?
Well, I don't know.
A lot of times people, you know, a thatch layer, you need to have...
Yeah,
there should be a pretty good inch and a half or inch at least thatch layer before you'd want to consider doing it. Otherwise, you're ripping a lot of the.
Okay.
So I would hold off until.
Well, I kind of thought so, but the yard service that I sometimes use said now is the best time to thatch. I did have plug aeration done last fall. And so I'm just trying to get my yard back in order.
Yeah.
So, okay, I don't, as he picks up the grass most of the time, apparently I don't have a lot of thatch.
Yeah, and if you don't have a lot of thatch, you really don't need to take out what you do have.
Okay, yep. And when should I overseed? I know on a previous program you had mentioned, or your guest had mentioned, Kentucky Blue with tall fescue, and that's what I bought. Would that go down now or in the spring?
You do need some seed-to-soil contact in order to make that seed work. So you do need to do a little seeding. Isn't that right, Ben?
Yeah, and if you have any areas of exposed soil, so if there are any really obvious bald spots, obviously that won't need thatching. You could seed again now, and I would do it very soon. I wouldn't wait too much longer. You'll want to get things established and germinated before winter, but you may need to do just a little bit of touch-up in the spring as well, depending on how things overwinter.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Thank you so very much, gentlemen.
Appreciate the call. And on to Kathy in Hayward. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. I bought a beautiful plant this summer that I knew nothing about. It's called the Mandeville. Beautiful red flowers. And it bloomed all summer. And then I read up on it and said that you could bring it in during the winter. It's lost all of its flowers, but I guess I want to know, that's probably normal.
Mandevilla plant, I bet.
Yeah. So losing the flowers isn't a bad thing. So a lot of these tropical plants are sometimes triggered to flower by day length. And so as our days get shorter, that's not unexpected. It also could be, if it's been in the same pot all year, could be nutrients, but I'm guessing it could be day length, could be the temperatures as well. But bringing it inside in a pot, definitely you can overwinter this. Again, they can be exceptionally robust vines. So just to sort of bear that in mind, you may need to do a little bit of clipping and pruning over the winter to keep it tidy. Also indoors, make sure to keep an eye out for indoor pests. So if you notice any little webs on the leaves or any kind of discoloration, that would be something else to sort of follow back on. But it can be overwintered very effectively. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Another question regarding that. We have hummingbirds galore. We go through 80 to 100 pounds of sugar. But I did not see one hummingbird on that plant.
So it could be that it is a tropical. So the hummers may be looking for plants that they are either native or that they're more familiar with. I think it's a cue from them that it maybe isn't a great hummingbird plant. But I don't think there's anything wrong with the plant itself. It just maybe they aren't really preferring it.
Plus, you've got 80 to 100 pounds
of really beautiful sugar. Yeah,
there you go. Thanks, Kathy. Kay in Manitowoc, let's go to you next. Hi, Kay.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Between the back of my yard and the neighbor's yard, there are stones and pieces of concrete. Well, it looks better than that. But anyway, there is a weed that is in there, that has rhizomes. And last year, the gentleman through the yard put on an awful lot of Roundup. Nothing kills that. Have you any suggestions? I'm sure because of the rocks being there, it is more of an issue or a nuisance.
It very much could be the time of the application.
Yeah, so what I was thinking.
Herbicide should do the trick, but it wants to be put on when the plant is in active growth. So this time of year, these perennial weeds, they're all going dormant. They're winding down. Herbicide now would just kind of annoy
be a
them.
Waste.
It wouldn't really have a great effect.
Yeah, well, he did it, I think it was pretty much midsummer last year, and it took it down, but...
And it really,
that's our only hope, huh?
It depends on the weed as well. There are some really thuggish weeds out there that one treatment isn't enough. Sometimes you've really got to hammer them a couple of times to get them out. There also could be, depending on what it is, there could be seeds in the soil that are coming back through for this. So it's not usually, sometimes it's not a one-and-done application. Sometimes you may need to treat a couple of times to fully get it out.
Yep, there you go. Thank you, Kay. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
You as well. Joe in Plimpton, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, we've got a cabin up in the UP, and there are apple trees all over the place that are doing fantastically well. And I was wondering, can one clip a young branch off of an apple tree and graft it? Is it as easy as the steps online, or is there a place where you could take a young branch and they would graft it and they would get it going and you could go back the next year and get it from them?
Yes, actually. So your second suggestion is my preferred way to, unless you really want to do the grafting yourself, and you can, certainly. There are the experts out there. You can send them your scion wood, and they will basically send you back a one-year-old tree in a year for those grafts that take. I can't remember the name right offhand of what I'll try and find it over the break, and maybe we'll post it for you, but also a quick Google search as well. But in terms of time to harvest that wood, it's not now. It'll actually be probably January and February when we have a midwinter thaw, or no later probably than March. But again, those companies you work with can give you more specific advice for the species you may be looking at.
There you
go. Okay. If one were to try it, do you have any idea what the success rate is? Is it like a 20% success rate?
I would say it just depends on the selections you're using, and also probably if you've never grafted before, there is a certain level of skill and finesse with it, and so depending on technique and the selections you're using could certainly impact the viability. But I know of some grafts that come through with 80 or 90%, others are less. It just depends on and again, if you've never grafted before, and it depends on your ultimate goal. If you want to learn how to graft, I'd say do it yourself. If you want to just get new trees, I'd say contract it out.
There's a really good book on grafting, and why did I even bring it up? Because I can't remember the author and the title. But some of the online ones I've noted, I leave some things to be desired. So you want to make sure if you're going to do it, make sure you've got a good source of information explaining how it's done. And if I think of it, I'll mention it. Thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you.
Zach in Milwaukee, hello.
Hey, you guys. I'm trying to figure out what to do with my raspberries. I have these really, really small, like, maggots that eat the inside of the fruit. They're very small, white. I'm not exactly sure what type of fly or what insect they come from, but I'm trying to figure out the best way to either get rid of them or what I should do possibly right now to help for next year.
Right now, I don't think there's too much you can do for now for this year. I'm not sure exactly what the exact pest would be, but my guess is it's probably was laid by some sort of other flying insect, a moth or some kind of thing like that. That in this sort of when the eggs have hatched, now they're eating the fruits. The most organic way to sort of go about this would be to put an actual physical barrier over them. So they do make this really, really fine mesh netting. You can sort of drape over the plants at sort of the precise time of year. And that'll also help to prevent birds from eating them and other things like that. But sort of putting that physical barrier in place is probably your first best step. And again, depending on the variety you have and Again, what the I would do a little bit more research on your own probably, but I would look into a physical barrier before chemical treatment, especially since you'll be consuming these.
Yeah, and there's a new bug that's really creating problems with raspberry growers throughout Wisconsin, and I can't think of the name of it right off the top of my head, but it would bear a little search around in the in maybe the insect diagnostic lab at the UW and post a question in to the lab about your raspberries, and they may have some more information about it. But I know some raspberry growers have even taken to not growing raspberries anymore because of the this new problem child that we have out there. So, but a physical barrier, you know.
And I say I'm not super familiar with that pest, but a physical barrier could be doing it. It depends on what the barrier is. But I would do, I would contact the disease diagnostic lab for sure.
Yeah, the insect diagnostic lab, yeah, at the UW-Madison. You can get to them online. Just type in University of Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Lab, and they'll pop up, and you can post your question there. And you'll get an answer pretty quickly, I think. They're usually pretty darn good about answering those questions. So, Zach, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Ben Fuda, our guest today. Ben is a director of the Allen Centennial Gardens on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus. In the studio with me today, it's always fun to talk with him, and always fun to have you with us for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us for another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest Ben Fuda, Executive Director of the Allen Centennial Garden. Well, what do you think about winter interest when you design your garden? What gardening questions do you have? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us your questions and maybe your photos at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Gary in Madison's been waiting a bit, so let's go to Gary. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Ben and Larry. Yeah, we have a southern exposure to our house, a western exposure, which are really hot and dry. On the west, the sun just beats right off the vinyl siding and dries everything up. And under the back southern exposure, the soften overhang keep everything really dry so and hot. We have a couple sedums and a peony back there, some shrubs on the sides of the house, but usually we just plant annuals and water them all year. But what can we put in there perennial-wise that has some various seasonal interests that, you know, can withstand that hot, dry, those hot, dry conditions?
Sure.
So a couple plants that sort of come to mind initially offhand, one would be butterfly weed. So the Asclepias tuberosa, that's one of our natives. I like to say it sort of thrives on neglect. It loves poor soil, likes dry conditions, should do really well in there. Also has beautiful seed heads and seed pods for this time of year. And again, great for local pollinators as well. Disease resistant, all winters.
Yeah, great plant.
But really anything. Another great place to check out, either if you... visit the Allen Centennial Garden or Ulbrich as well. Both of us have gravel gardens, and so these really feature plants that do well in sharp draining conditions. We don't give them any excess irrigation, and so you can really see some plants that perform well in those conditions at either location.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, very good.
Thanks, Gary. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. James in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a live cedar fence. It's all American white cedar.
Okay.
And it runs on the west, the north, and the east side of our property. And they've been there for about, we planted them about 5 years ago, and we trenched the whole thing, dropped the cedars in every 2 feet, and they've been growing like weeds. And we just clipped them off not too long ago to get them to start, you know, hedging out. And now all of a sudden, the bottom of the trees are starting to turn yellow. on the inside. And it's kind of freaking me out because we've got a lot of money in these bad boys all the way around the property.
Yeah, for sure.
You said yellow on the inside?
Yeah, it's starting to turn yellow on the inside.
Okay.
Now, we've had it mulched, and, you know, to keep the moisture in and everything. And there hasn't been anything around them to disturb the soil.
And so is it at the yellowing all the way through the plant, or is it right near the base? Or
right now it's near the base and about a third up the tree on the inside.
And this is on all of them or on just one specific spot?
Oh, no. This is starting to happen all the way around.
Okay. It's not a good thing. I'm just trying to get a little more. I will confess, I'm not a super expert in woody materials, but I would say this would qualify to maybe contact an arborist, have them come out and take a look and probably give you a more specific diagnosis. But this isn't natural for them. They shouldn't be doing this.
Should get some good photos. One thing you could do is just get some good photos and send those photos to the University of Wisconsin Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And you might get a pretty quick response from Dr. Death.
Yes.
Loves to call himself Dr. Death. Our Brian, the guy at the disease diagnostic clinic. I'd do that, or I'd get an arborist over there pretty quick.
Yeah.
I just wondered if it was because we had so much rain up in this area, and they've been so moist that they're just getting just too much waterlogged.
Well, that could well be.
And that was, you know, the other thing I was wondering. It could have just been related to this year, but because you have such an investment in these, I would want to have somebody else take a look at it just to verify. When you said you trenched it, when you refilled in the trench, I'm assuming you used the soil that came out of the trench, or did you bring
a combination? Yeah, we used some of the soil that came out. We mixed it with goat manure and compost, and then fertilized that, and then let it sit for 6 months, and then redid the soil again, tilled it, and then put the trees in.
Okay, so this might, I think it is, I'm guessing this is going to be water related. Again, I could be wrong, but a lot of these kind of evergreen, you know, yews and the cedars, they don't really like a lot of waterlogged conditions. And again, with the rain we've had this year, since that soil was amended, even though it sat for a bit, there is a chance that the soil around the trench could be sort of preventing it from really draining as effectively as it otherwise might be. And so without knowing it, they could have been sitting in wetter conditions than what they're used to. Again, so this might just be something that was a fluke and phenomenon this year. Again, I'd have someone come check it out, but I'm leaning in the direction that it's water related.
Yeah, but get somebody to look at it anyway.
Yeah, okay. Well,
that kind of money.
I was kind of wondering.
Thanks, James. Appreciate the call. And Jude in Iola up next. Your turn, Jude. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. The first one is, Braden, and last year before winter, I put marsh hay down to keep the weeds and the quack grass and everything else from coming on through, and I noticed that of the garden just keeps getting the grass. So I just put down like about 4 more inches, and I'm wondering if that's going to kill off all the stuff that might come through, or am I doing it wrong? Was I supposed to do something other than that before I put the hay down and planted the flowers?
So is this in a flower bed you're doing this, or is this an area that you're trying to sort of kill the weeds in order to plant a new flower bed?
It's in a beautiful, there's perennials and all that I put in, they've come in beautifully, but now along the edge, you know where the grass line is?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't fenced, but the grass line is, all this grass, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 inches is starting to encroach into the garden. By putting more marsh hay over that, will it kill that off, or am I?
So something like the quackgrass, that will come up through just about anything. The only thing that really stops it is either physical digging, some sort of physical barrier to prevent those roots from coming through, or some sort of selective herbicide treatment if it's really, really bad. If it's coming from underneath a fence, one thing that could work is either getting some really deep metal edging or some type of edging, and sort of sinking that in there should prevent it from migrating into your garden again. But to get it out of your space, just mulching it won't do. You'll either have to manually weed it again or do some herbicide treatment. And especially with crackgrass, it is, if any little piece of root that's left in there will come back. So just being really vigilant with working slow.
It doesn't look like quackgrass. It just looks like the regular grass because we planted new grass. And so I'm thinking it's just regular grass that's growing into that, because we ended up getting those big squares of grass transplanting areas.
Yeah, I would say then if it's just normal lawn grass, you know, just a physical barrier should work.
For sure.
Yep.
Yep. There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have open lines once again. Oh, my goodness. You can join in with your questions or comments. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Speaking of emails, Julie emailed and sent a picture, a photo of her garden, and it has suffered. She says, I was away for most of the summer, and my garden suffered. What should I do now? Should I weed? Should I let it go? I would like to encourage some grass growth. Should I weed those areas and reseed this week?
I would say, yeah, if there are areas that you specifically want to be turfed, I would say weeding and seeding in the next week would be your best way to go. If these are, I can't tell fully from the image to know, I'm guessing most of these are annual weeds, so winter will kill them off. That being said, if they're setting seeds, they'll be back next year, even if you pull them out now. If you do want to get things cleaned out, though, doing a layer of mulch this fall, leaf compost or leaf mulch would be a good way to help keep things suppressed in early spring, so that the moment the ground thaws, you're not battling weeds right away.
There you go. Thank you so much for that interesting photo. Man, the garden looks a little in tough shape right now, Julie, but you can make it better. Just keep at it.
All of us, I'll say, you're not alone. We all have those years. It's fine. This is gardening.
Yeah, it's gardening. Bob in Madison says, my question is about vines growing on buildings. Does stump and vine killer actually work? When's the best time to apply it? We did talk a little bit about that, but...
Yeah, it definitely will work. There are different products out there depending on what your ultimate goals are. And I would highly caution you to look at the labels, because if these are just sort of growing on a building and there's nothing else valuable around them, it's not as huge of a deal. But if you have valuable plants, especially trees or shrubs nearby, some of these herbicides can translocate underground. So you may put it on one plant, it'll go into the roots, but then end up killing stuff around it, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months later. So just be really cautious with that. And again, in terms of timing to do it, now is actually not a bad time. Again, the plants, it's sort of all the juices are going into the soil for winter, and so everything's moving downward into the roots. When you absolutely don't want to do this is in spring, when everything is coming back up, because
the other way,
it'll just wash it. You'll put it on, and it'll just wash away almost instantly.
We have an update. A couple of callers called in to let me know the name of the, when we're talking about raspberries here, and the insect name I couldn't think of. The larvae might be the spotted winged Drosophila, a fruit fly, and that's the one that's creating all sorts of headaches across the state. So the spotted winged Drosophila. On to Cassie in Minocqua. Hi, Cassie.
Hi. I have a little problem with my forsythia bush. It got very, very tall and very leggy, so I cut it back, probably in the fall. Last year, maybe a year ago, and I got no blooms at all. So I've let it grow out a little, but I'm wondering what I did wrong here. Hopefully it'll come back, you know.
Yeah, not to worry. You're okay. So the reason it didn't bloom that next spring is that forsythia will bloom on second-year wood. So this means that this time of year, if you were to prune anything right now, you're cutting off next spring's flower buds. And so if you want to do some pruning on it, wait until after it flowers, you know, March, April or so, then you're totally clear to do whatever pruning you need to do. But doing anything this time of year essentially removes next year's flowers. So that's why you just got green this spring. But next spring, if it's still alive and doing good, you should have a beautiful display.
It's growing like crazy, but there was no flowers. So.
Yeah, you'll get them next year.
Definitely get them next year, yep.
All right, well, thank you.
Thanks, Cassie. Rita in the Milwaukee area, it's your turn. Hi, Rita.
Oh, I have an apple tree, and we do get flowers in spring, but I don't get any fruit. I had one apple on the tree this year. It seems like they all blow off the flowers. And
how old's your tree?
Oh, it's about 4 years old.
If it's still that young, it could be, I would think by four that it would start, it'd be getting up to the point where it would be durable enough to sustain a crop. It could be disease related. I doubt
it. Or it could also be the terrible spring that we had.
Yes, it for sure. A lot of, you know, the bloom was so short, either pollination didn't happen the way it should or something like that.
I'd give it another year, and if it was me.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it done yet.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go to Liz in La Crosse. Hi, Liz.
Good morning, guys. Thanks so much for having Garden Talk on. My question is, I have a comfrey plant, C-O-M-F-R-E-Y, and that booger went underneath the fence line onto my neighbor, and I've tried to dig it out, and that just seemed to make it grow even more.
That just made it angrier, yeah.
Nice taproot. How can I organically, without using chemicals, make my neighbor happy?
So the best way to go about this, I would say, is smothering it, probably.
Yeah.
Getting some heavy black plastic or something, putting it not just over the crown of the plant, but especially because it runners, you may have to go out a couple of feet away from it. Weight it down with some rocks or bricks or something like that, and I would give it at least a year, keeping that plastic in place. You know, and keep an eye out for if you do see any suckers coming up outside of the plastic, just keep on top of it. But a year undercover, I would, you know, if you do it this fall, maybe check it next fall. If the roots are in any way still plump or in any way still look good, keep the plastic on. But if the roots have shriveled and have started to rot, you're in the clear.
There you go.
Okay. My quick question is, I have a chain link fence, and how far down should I go to try to block it from going over there?
In terms of depth, it shouldn't be... If for smothering the plant, it's just on the above the soil. You shouldn't have to worry about digging it out. If it is getting on for the stuff that has crossed over to your neighbor, that's something where they will probably also have to do, unless you go over there and dig it for them. Because otherwise it'll just keep coming. But I would say they may have to put down some black plastic on their side as well, just to get it.
But if she wants to put a barrier.
Oh, okay, for future. Okay. You know, comfrey, I know, is it can be aggressive. I'm not sure how its roots are going to work. I would say if you're going to put a physical barrier in, at least 8 to 10 inches to be on the real safe side.
Yeah, that'd be my guess. That's a lot of work.
It is, yes.
For that comfrey plant that you got there, Liz.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, good Liz. Luck. Appreciate it. Diane in Madison, your turn. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'd like to figure out how to grow some redbud trees from my seeds.
It shouldn't be too hard. Good news is, because, again, these are native, they're weeds for us in the Allen Centennial Garden. If you have adult trees anywhere, or even if you don't, if you harvest them from a friend or along the road, honestly, just sort of tossing them on the soil in the fall, and they'll do their thing. They shouldn't need a whole lot of TLC.
Okay, what if I plant them in the soil? Will that do it better?
I don't know if it necessarily will do it better. In its wild habitat, you know, the seed pods, they'll drop and they'll just sort of sit on the soil surface. The seeds, if you are going to plant them, I would just sort of scatter them on the soil and maybe rake over them, but I wouldn't dig them in too deep or put them in a hole. I'd just keep them right on the soil surface.
It's kind of like with grass seed. You want some soil soil to seed contact, but it doesn't have to be
deep.
Deep, for sure. Does that help out, Diane?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. I was going to ask you, before I take another call, I wanted to mention that you guys have some teaching classes and so forth. Do you have any more scheduled yet this year?
So for the rest of 2018, we're pretty much we've wound down our season, but we just released yesterday our lineup of winter lecture series. So these begin in mid-January through February. These are on Saturday mornings on the UW campus, and that full schedule is available on our blog right now. We also will be announcing our symposium lineup for next March, Monday. So, and we have some excellent people coming for that as well.
And how did they find that again?
On our website, allencentennialgarden.org.
There we go. Let's go to Michael in West Bend. Hi, Michael.
Good afternoon, Larry and Ben. Jill, thank you for producing. My question is, I have several large hibiscus plants, which have been prolific flowerers this year on my back patio in the sun. I'd like to bring them inside, but they are gargantuan, and my house is small. So is it best practice to prune them down now as I'm bringing them in, or do I have to keep them bushy and lose my room for the winter months and prune them in the spring?
Oh, I'm thinking. I think you'd be safe to cut them back now. If they're the tender tropical ones and they're coming indoors, how about the other thing? If you have more than one, do an experiment. Cut back one, leave the other up. See how it goes.
Am I allowed to aggressively prune the ones which have the favorite? My wife's most favorite color and be fine.
I will leave that up to you.
I do the other one. So that one's up to you, Michael. But if it's me, I'd do the other one and do my little experiment with that other one. We have got an update from a forester and some other listeners called in regarding the cedars that the gentleman called about. He was quite worried about. It's possible that the cedars that he planted are just experiencing the fall color change, even though it was a wet year. Could just be a seasonal thing, and certainly that's what you'd hope for.
Yes, that would be the ideal, yes.
Yeah, and boy, here we are about out of time. I'm sorry we didn't. Every one of our lines is filled, and I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody. But that's kind of the way it goes on Garden Talk and on most of our shows. As a matter of fact, on the Ideas Network, all these 11 to 12:30 shows. Ben, thank you so much. You'll come back and be with us again. In fact, I think you got a family gardening day May 4th.
Yes.
From 5 to 10, and that's a free one. That's another one that's probably up on your website. So
it will be shortly, yep.
Yeah, oh, there we go. Ben Fuda directs the Allen Centennial Gardens at the University of Wisconsin-Madison on the UW-Madison campus. Beautiful garden, and everything is popping and beautiful right now. So if you get a chance, get out there and take a look at it. At 11, we'll talk about the future of nuclear energy with someone from the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Hope you can join us for that. And then age-related macular degeneration at 11:45.